You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com. Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
I'll admit it, I'm addicted to Google. Need to know the numbers of the last Powerball lottery? Can't remember what Prince called himself before he was Prince? And what is Pokemon Go? When in doubt, Google it. I even use it when I need veterinary information. The answers that pop up on these inquiries are sometimes blatantly wrong or can be highly misleading. So what's a pet owner to do when they want information on pet care? Where can they go to find reliable, reputable information? Dr. Lauren Demos is the 2017 president of the American Association of Feline Practitioners and today's guest. This organization of feline experts has created a spectacular website that is pet parent friendly and cat wise. So curl up with your favorite feline and listen with a purpose. I know, that was bad, sorry. You'll learn some fascinating facts on how you can be the best cat owner ever.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
You know that feeling when you go to clean the litter box and it's a complete disaster? Yeah, we've got you covered. Introducing World's Best Cat Litter Zero Mess, the advanced litter that gives you 2 times better clumping and more odor control with less litter. Zero Mess combines the concentrated power of corn with superabsorbent plant fibers. Translation, scoop once and you're done. Find it at a pet store near you and save $2. Visit www.saveonworldsbest.com.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Demos, thank you very much for being with us today. This is a topic that I am highly passionate about because I have my two kitties.
Thank you for having me, Bernadine. I much appreciate the opportunity to be here.
So I'm talking about the American Association of Feline Practitioners and these websites. And I know, I'm sure you've had clients that have come into you and said, well, I checked the website and I checked Google and it said X. And it's confusing. So tell me a little bit about this website. What's the name of it?
So catfriendly.com is the name of the website that you're talking about. This is a website that is actually brand spanking new. As of this year, 2017, we outrolled or enrolled the website and have that out for the public now. And this website is really designed to be exactly what you've said, sort of the antithesis or maybe the solution for people, cat owners, cat caregivers that are looking for accurate, well-distilled, and appropriate information on their cats. Because as you've said, not only can Google be misleading and entertaining, I do have to mention that. It can be very
entertaining. Oh, the cat videos, yes.
But it's hard to know the accuracy of the information that's out there. So the purpose of this website is to give somebody a one-stop website to get really pertinent, really up-to-date, good veterinary distilled information for their cats.
So you are the president of 2017 president of the American Association of Feline Practitioners. So tell us about that group, because people think, okay, you're just veterinarians that are out there and everyone's going to be an expert in dogs and cats and birds, etc. And I think I know a little bit, but oh, you guys are just geniuses. So tell us about these geniuses.
Thanks. So yeah, I'm honored and really just thrilled to be part of this group. So the American Association of Feline Practitioners, we go by the acronym, the AAFP, and we're an organization or an association where our mission is really to improve the health and the welfare of cats. We support high standards of feline practice and CE offerings that are feline specific, And also we help to fund scientific investigation, so research into feline-specific medical issues. And we try to define a feline practitioner as anyone that sees even just one cat a year, because our heart, most veterinarians, we're really wanting to do the best thing we can for our patients we see, and cats are really a unique sort of species and therefore a really unique veterinary patient. And so anyone that wants to gain more information, be a better feline practitioner, that's what our group is really about, the cat, and what can we do for the cat and the people that practice with cats.
Dr. Demos, you're so right, because so many people, and I think sometimes veterinarians, maybe some of the ones that graduated a couple of decades or so ago, kind of under the impression, well, you know, cats are like little dogs and dogs are like little people, and okay, we can treat them very much the same. And oh my goodness, every day when I go into work and I'm seeing cats, and you know, I try to focus on their care since I'm a little prejudiced. I have cats and I love dogs, and yes, I can treat dogs too, but oh, cats are such unique little creatures. What are some of the differences between a dog and a cat, for instance?
Wow. Well, aside from the obvious, cats are probably the best adjective I could think of as a really tacit sort of species. There's a lot of unspoken communication or really subtle forms of communication that cats have. People that aren't vets, people know that dogs wag their tail and they're happy, and dogs, you know, raise their lip and growl a little bit and you're getting a warning, or their ears go back. And canine body language is really easy to read for most people, even people that don't own dogs and have never owned dogs. But cats wag their tails, and people don't know what that means. Is that a happy cat? A cat's purring, and people say that cat has to be happy, but cats purr when they're in pain or frightened or stressed as well. So cats, just as a species, are so much, there's so many layers under the surface, and I think that's probably the easiest way to encompass why cats are so much different than dogs. And it's a good thing. It's a really good thing. I like that about them.
It's a good thing, but I think one of the real problems, Dr. Demos, is you're saying, you know, they can be so subtle at times. I think that's one of the reasons why cats are not brought to veterinarians as often as dogs. And I think when they are brought so many times, they're much more ill than a dog, because a dog is in your face. I'm happy. I'm wagging my tail. I want to go for a walk. And when all of a sudden it's just kind of laying there in the corner, it's like, there's something wrong with this dog. I need to take it in. But I typically tell clients that, you know, what does a cat do, especially a mature cat? What does a mature cat do when it feels good? Sleep. And what does a mature cat do when it doesn't feel good? Sleep. So tell us some of the stats about cats and dogs seeing their veterinarian for just general wellness, and why wellness exams are important.
Yeah, Bernadine, you've really hit the nail on the head with the statement that cats are just, to rephrase it, masters at hiding illness. Cats are traditionally thought of often as a species that's not a household pet. Cats often still have a purpose, or up until recently have been a species where they were barn cats and out on the farm and catching mice, or indoor, outdoor, and those cats were sort of just thought of as often incidental house guests rather than a true pet like a dog might be. So there's a lot of historical attitude that cats don't need wellness care. Cats take care of themselves, and cats hide when they're sick well, as you've mentioned. So we know from studies that have been done that cats receive far less veterinary care than dogs do. In fact, in veterinary medicine, as I'm sure you've heard, we tend to have a saying, dogs get cradle to grave veterinary care, whereas cats tend to get cradle and grave veterinary care. We don't see cats in the years where they're generally adults or becoming senior-aged cats. We see them by the time that they're often sick and are in need of veterinary care. And that includes the fact that we don't see them for routine wellness care.
I think one of the reasons why so many people don't take their cats in is they hate the trip. It's like, oh my goodness, you show them a cat carrier and they're under the bed and they're just running away from you. What are some of the tips that people can do to make that trip less of an ordeal?
Yeah, that's a great point. Cats are not the easiest species to really facilitate a straightforward visit to the veterinarian, because the visit starts at home, sometimes weeks before your planned visit to the veterinarian. Unlike a dog where you can put a collar on and get the leash out and the dog's going, this is great, we're off for a trip. Cats often see the carrier and you don't see the cat for the next 2 days.
True.
So, or you see their butt and that's all you see of the cat for the next 2 days, heading in the opposite direction. Cats can be challenging. And so some really good tips, like I said, start days or weeks in advance of the visit. And that includes getting your carrier out, having that around so it's not a new changing object in their environment that they now associate with questions. What's going on? Where am I going? What is this? Making sure you have the right carrier can also be really important. And people don't think about this. A lot of times people purchase a carrier when their cat's a kitten and they're tiny and they weigh 3 or 4 pounds. And now it's 5 years later and your cat's going to go in for dental care and your cat weighs 15 pounds and suddenly that nice small compact carrier that fit that kitten really well isn't going to fit that 15 pound cat. So making sure you've got a really appropriately sized carrier, one made of appropriate materials. There are some really great new carriers that are actually converted from a cat bed into a cat carrier. They even do car crash test ratings on some of these carriers. So there's a variety of different carrier types that can also be facilitatory in bringing cats in and decreasing stress levels.
Isn't that one called a sleepy pod? Strange name, but there's probably other ones.
You've hit the nail on. Yep, that's exactly. I love the sleepy pods. They have been a fantastic carrier for so many cats.
And it's great because you're saying they're not afraid of it because, hey, this is just my cat bed. I'm in this thing all the time. It smells like me. I'm used to it. And now you just pop this top on. It's like, oh, okay. That's not so bad.
Yeah, and then they get their bed in the clinic, too. They get to hang out, and it's kind of like a little mini getaway, but they've got their favorite security blanket or toy tucked in there, too. It's a great way for cats to travel. Another really nice option is using feline facial pheromones. So that's something that's come out on the market within the last decade or so. It's become more popular. There's some new formulations out there now for cats. This can also significantly help to decrease stress and stress associated with travel or novel situations like being in a veterinary clinic. So people can get these sprays or diffusers. They can also spray towels or use wipes on carriers or put towels that are sprayed with these pheromones over the carriers prior to travel. And that can be a nice calming opportunity for cats as well for travel.
A little aromatherapy for these kitties.
Exactly, prior to their mani and pedi.
One of the things I have found with the pheromones, and we use them at my clinic and really like them, is the fact that some of the aerosol propellant in it seems to be a little bit harsh sometimes. So I'll usually say, let's spray it. Just let them go ahead and, you know, get that smell out of the way. And then the pheromones are there. And it's like, oh, yes, I can do this. This is so much better.
Yeah, exactly. I think that there are some cats that respond so well to this. And as we're kind of running down the list, it's a good opportunity for me to point out that both Cat Friendly, the website that we're talking about today, is really good at suggesting and offering some of these in a nice format for people that want it all laid out in written context. And there's also for practitioners that are interested with our cat-friendly practice program through the AAFP. This is another component that we're trying to disseminate and get out to veterinarians so that they've got these tips and tricks and tools at their fingertips to make their own veterinary practice as cat-friendly as possible.
People oftentimes say, you know, the cat's indoors, you know, thankfully more cats are being kept indoors. I think it's really a great way of keeping them safe and healthy. But being indoors, they don't need the exam. They don't need the vaccines in particular. Why is it important? How often should they be taking their cats in?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I'm glad you've asked. We know that cats, even indoor only cats, certainly need, depending on their age, between 1 and 2 veterinary visits a year. So our older cats, our senior cats, we like to try and see every 6 months. And our senior cats can be anywhere from about 8, 9, or 10 years on up. And then our sort of juvenile and adult cats, we're trying to see annually. There's a lot of issues. Medically, we tend to see dental disease as probably the most predominant issue we face in the younger cats, the young adults. Through adults, everything from 2 and 3 year old cats on up. And that's really hard to pick up at home. So that's something we're always looking for in our routine wellness cats. Weight gain or weight loss, those things, you just don't pick up on at home either if it's gradual. When you talk about vaccines for indoor-only cats, I like to talk to my clients about equating this to getting kind of a flu shot. We're looking for preventative measures that we can do that we know are effective in felines. And vaccinating your cats against things like distemper, feline distemper and feline herpes and Calici virus. It's the same as you or I going to a doctor and getting our flu shot. So we're trying to avoid illness rather than treat it after it's arisen. So there's certainly a lot of good and appropriate vaccines. Rabies is another that's often mandated by the state. Here in Michigan, where I practice for cats, it's actually not. I think we're the last state holdout for rabies vaccines. But still, it's something that we have at least two vaccines that we're probably wanting all our indoor cats updated on an annual to a triennial basis.
One of the ways in my area, because I'm in Southern California, I tell people with their indoor cats they need to be vaccinated for rabies, and they give me this very incredulous look like, why? It's indoors. How is it going to be exposed to anything that's going to give it rabies? And we had a situation in Laguna Beach, a community very close to where I practice, that a bat flew in the house, and the cat went, wow, a bird flew in the house. This is awesome. And it's not even flying that well. It's just kind of fluttering around. I can get that. Well, it was a rabid bat, and this cat thankfully had been up to date on its rabies vaccines, but otherwise that could be quarantine or worse. So yes, I think it's always so important to get those kitties vaccinated. And now, because of organizations like AAFP, we're not vaccinating every year with every vaccine.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that one of the great things about the veterinary profession is we're really a bunch of scientists at heart. So every day, I think we're going out there looking for ways to expand our knowledge and to question what we did the day before, the week before, the month before, the year before. And vaccines are something that we've, in the last couple of years, spent a lot of time as a profession really trying to hone down on and evaluate what is the best and most appropriate vaccination protocol. And as you've mentioned, we've changed. As a profession, we used to feel that vaccines needed to be done annually without question. And now we have some data to suggest that's just simply not the case. We also have new vaccine types out there that allow us to potentially have better duration of immunity, which means that antibodies are lasting longer and our memory cells are better able to recognize foreign materials when they arise in the body. So, yeah, we've cut down on the number of recommended vaccines, and we've also cut down on the frequency that we recommend some of these vaccines. And the AAFP has a really great list of all the recommended vaccines, both for in and for outdoor cats in the U.S. and North America.
And quickly, because we need to take a break, I know that many clients are concerned with vaccines because of adverse side effects and the possibility of getting cancer with some of these vaccines. If you could address that.
Yeah, that's a really good question, and it is something that comes up probably weekly, if not at least monthly in our practice. We know that previously there was evidence in the early 90s to show that some of our vaccines at the time created a strong inflammatory reaction in some cats. The incidence was probably less than 1 in 10,000 patients, but it was a real concern because the side effects, as you've mentioned, had the potential to range from anything where they had acute inflammatory reactions to cancer. And that's a scary word when we talk about preventative care and potential side effects causing cancer. That study evaluated a lot of the earlier vaccines, the vaccines that contained more inflammatory products, adjuvants, things like aluminum, oils, and some other vaccines. We don't know whether it's a specific feline genetic reaction. There is some suggestion that other non-vaccine products like microchips or trauma to the eye, long-acting injectable medications like penicillins in a few members of the species can also lead to really similar effects like cancers that histologically are very similar to the ones that we see post-vaccination and that we used to see post-vaccination. So we don't know whether it's the product itself or the products that we used to use or whether it's a genetic reaction for some individuals that are more susceptible. But we do know that the incidence seems as though it's decreasing significantly in more recent years. There's anecdotal data. There's also some studies of population data to suggest that the incidence is decreasing. So it's something that as we move forward and we develop different types of vaccines, for instance, we now have non-adjuvanted vectored vaccines that are believed to be far less inflammatory. We have a lot of better technology to address some of the concerns that we think were factors or roles in these cancers. And we feel that these vaccines that we are presently using are safe. And certainly as we decrease the frequency of vaccination, we also feel like we address another potential factor in causation for some of these cancers. So today, the benefits of vaccinating cats, I think, far outweigh the risks.
I love it. So quick question. Do you have cats?
My laugh should be enough of an answer. I've started to establish I do have cats. I have far too many. I have less than 10. That's my answer for you.
And do you vaccinate your cats?
I do. All my cats are up to date on their vaccine.
Great. That's all that needs to be said. If you're the president of the American Association of Feline Practitioners and your cats are vaccinated, I think you stand behind what you say. I'm speaking right now with Dr. Laura Demos. She's the 2017 president of the American Association of Feline Practitioners. We're talking about a great website, catfriendly.com. We'll be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
I'm Dana Humphrey, the founder of Whitegate PR. We have been specializing in PR and marketing in the pet industry for over 10 years. If you have a pet product or service you would like to promote, give us a call. We can help create awareness for your brand on TV, radio, magazines, newspapers, and blogs. Feel free to reach me directly at 619-414-9307 or learn more on our website at whitegatepr.com or follow us on Facebook.
Everything we tried failed except the Dynavite.
The standard run-of-the-mill tests and treatments.
Cortisone.
Antihistamine.
Multiple creams.
Antibiotic spray.
Multiple prescriptions.
Steroid injections.
Topical spray.
The sharp antibiotics.
Steroid cream.
No results.
It was neglect. The other owners didn't care enough about him to take care of him and to give him the nutrition he needed.
A nutritional supplement like Dynavite.
To be the healthy, happy dog he is today.
Dinovite.com.
If you want the dog to be healthy, you got to feed it something healthy.
Put some nutrition in your dog.
The vet that I trust recommended Dynavite. The dog I have today, because of Dynavite, has a sparkle in his eye, a lush coat, healthy skin.
When you rescue a dog, you've got to feed them right for life.
Dynavite will make your dog a happy dog.
Dynavite is nutrition.
Dynavite for life.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
Dinovite.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to the Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Demos, this is really, really interesting, important information. And we've been talking about pet owners bringing their cats in, trying to bring their cats in for these exams. And you had mentioned before the break about two conditions that we see all too frequently and many times people don't appreciate: dental disease and obesity. I was reading recently that it's estimated that about 60% of cats in the United States are considered obese. How is a cat owner supposed to recognize, other than when they can't pick it up or it's sitting on your lap and your legs fall asleep because the cat's so heavy, how are they supposed to recognize that their cat might be a little bit chubby?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I don't have the source of the statistic, but I've read recently that 75 to 80% of cats are
obese. Oh, it's that high.
In the U.S. Yeah.
Oh.
And I would, based on the cats that I see, have to say I tend to concur. So one of the great things about routine wellness care is it is a little bit of a time check, a stop in time to say, what is my cat's weight? What has my cat's weight done since the last visit? What should my cat's ideal weight be? These are things that people can certainly talk with their veterinarian about and really address, because it's so easy to live with a cat on a day-in and day-out basis. Just like ourselves, it's really easy to put off going to the gym for 1 week and then 2 weeks, and 2 weeks becomes 2 months. And you get those winter extra 10 or 15 pounds because it's a lot easier to stay inside than it is to go out for a run or a bike. And it's hard when you have gradual weight gain like that in a person or a cat to notice that, to really appreciate it. A lot of people that I see, they're bringing their cat in and they're saying, Doc, I think my cat's overweight. And I say, why is that? Why do you think that your cat's overweight? I mean, I know their cat's overweight because their cat's gained 5 pounds since I saw them 8 months ago. But they're saying, well, my daughter came home from college and she said, Mom, your cat's fat. She's gained a lot of weight. Often it takes an outside perspective to point it out. So that's one of the things that a veterinarian can provide for you. Or just send your kids to college and tell them to come home and check on the cat every couple months.
So how is a cat owner supposed to know? You see your cat every day, you lose that perspective of, and it has this long flowing coat. So it's like, what can they do? How can they put hands on to tell?
Sure. So we do have some really sort of simplified body condition scores. That's what we call it, to determine what is an appropriate body condition for a cat. And we can rank that. But really simply, it's about putting your hands in your cat. Can you feel their rib cage with relative ease? Can you move your hands, slide them back and forth over the ribs, and appreciate that you can feel actual ribs? Or does your cat just feel like a little tiny turkey butterball that's really hard to appreciate anything like their ribs? Same along the spine. I don't want to feel too much of a cat's spine when I'm petting them, either along their hips or between their shoulder blades and down their back. But I should be able to feel a little bit of those bony prominences, just a slight bit. Cats also tend to have what we call their abdominal fat pad. I've heard everyone call it things from their cat's magic carpet to the cat mop, because it kind of wobbles between their legs and gets the dust bunnies as they run around the house. Abdominal fat pads are one of the first areas cats tend to put on weight. And if your cat's got a huge abdominal fat pad that's kind of wobbling around, that might be another just visual sign that maybe your cat weighs a little bit too much and you should think about having that checked.
Dental disease. People will look at the teeth in front, see the canine teeth, and yeah, oftentimes they look pretty good, and oh, it has a little tuna breath. But dental disease is such a covert issue that bad teeth can literally affect the entire cat's system. So from the heart to the muscles to their kidneys to all these different organs can be affected by that bad oral disease. And people many times are going, but it's still eating. How can it have bad teeth? What's your response to all that?
That's an excellent question. I tell people very frequently that cats have 30 teeth as a species, and cats can have disease of all 30 of those teeth and still walk in the door and they're eating, they're maintaining weight, and there's no change to their routine at home. Maybe they groom a little bit less. Maybe that's the only sign that the owners notice. Maybe they have a little bit of bad breath. But when I look in their mouths, it's awful. That cat certainly has to feel miserable. And it can be a real struggle sometimes to get people, cat owners, cat caregivers, to understand that this cat, who's otherwise outright acts normal, looks normal, has really significant disease, because cats are, again, going back to the topic, cats are masters at hiding illness. Cats are just so good at hiding any discomfort or signs of disease. So that's often an argument that I'll have with people, that their cat needs dental care and it's important, and their cat will feel better. I can promise them their cat will feel better after dental care. And most people, after we do dentistries on these cats, come back in and say, boy, yeah, there was no question. My cat's suddenly playing. They haven't played with their toys in years. I've forgotten they used to chase this mouse around and throw it up in the air and bat it and then run down the stairs. My cat hasn't done that. But you're right. There was a huge change in their personality afterwards. It's hard to recognize. It's really subtle when dental disease first starts, and it starts in young cats often. Again, 2 or 3 year old cats can come in and they've got a single tooth with a cavity, but you certainly wouldn't want to sit at home for 12 months or 24 months with a painful tooth that's being resorbed, it would be uncomfortable. So cats are the same way. They might hide it a little bit better, but they get this a lot of the same or similar issues that we have as people, and they need to be addressed.
And it's not impossible to brush a cat's teeth. I always tell people, the cat might tell you that it's impossible, but with some patience, some treats. I like using Q-tips. I don't know about you, but a Q-tip with a little bit of kitty dentifrice popping underneath those lips, and you can use that as your toothbrush. It's like, all right, this might not be the most fun thing in the world, but fine, I'll let you do it.
Yeah, I agree. Q-tips, it's really all about just that mechanical wiping or cleansing action, breaking up that biofilm that wants to calcify and lead to plaque and lead to gingivitis. If we can just disrupt that daily or at least a couple times a week, we can often make some pretty good headway in preventing some of the issues that arise in cats' mouths. So Q-tips, washcloths, fingertip toothbrushes, cat toothbrushes, baby toothbrushes, any of that's great. And sometimes it's not even about the pet toothpaste, although some cats really like the flavor, so that's a bonus. Just no people toothpaste. That's what I always have to make sure we're on the same page on. It's fluoride toxic to cats.
Oh my goodness. Very important for them to know. What is the feeling, the recommendation of the American Association of Feline Practitioners with regard to feeding dry food or canned food, especially as it relates to dental disease? Because a lot of people think, oh, the canned food is just going to mush on the teeth and the dry food is going to brush away some of that tartar. What are the feelings of AAFP?
Yeah, that's a really good question. If I wear my AAFP hat versus my feline practitioner hat, I'd say that there's not a strong recommendation by the AAFP in terms of dental care and what's best for a cat's oral health. If I take my AAFP hat off for a minute and talk as a feline practitioner, I know that there's some studies out there that certainly suggest that while there can be some improvement in the amount of calculus that's formed in cats' mouths when they're fed predominantly dry food or eating a more natural diet, including prey, there's no significant difference in the development of resorptive lesions or cavities, or significant difference in the development of calculus between control groups that are fed a canned diet versus a canned and dry commercial diet versus cats that are out in the wild catching prey. So yes, we tend to want to think that dry food, crunchy food is really good at cleaning their teeth. And there is some evidence to show that it certainly helps. But statistically, we don't have any really great studies that are conclusive to say that one diet leads to dental disease while another is really effective at preventing it. And we know that there's two types of dental disease with cats. There's calculus and plaque and the gingivitis associated with that, which can certainly lead to bone loss and tooth loss. But there's a whole other set of dental disease that cats get, which is cavity formation. And cat cavities start inside the tooth and work their way out to the enamel so that by the time we see it, we can't do anything to save that tooth in most cases. And that aspect of dental disease in cats seems entirely unrelated to diet, or at least we haven't been able to connect the dots yet.
And it's so exquisitely painful. So yes, whenever I see it, even if they're small, it's like, oh, I'm so sorry. But though it doesn't look too bad to you, it is a cavity that needs to be extracted and there's no way to save it. And I don't know what causes it other than it's a kitty problem.
It is. There's a couple people every now and then that I meet that have the same sorts of cavities. People cavities are the opposite. They start outside and go in. And so when they come in and we're talking about them, they're like, I had one of those. And I say, you're a cat. You've got cat cavities.
Well, speaking of cats, and as we are, the catfriendly.com website. What I love about the site, there's, yes, all these veterinary things that we're talking about, but other things that, again, it's just really for that pet owner of how to take care of your kitty at home and how to be the best cat caregiver that you can be. And I love the part of why does my cat, do these things? I mean, that is so much fun because there's these questions that come up in life. It's like, huh, why does my cat dig to China when it's in its kitty box? And why does my cat box have to be someplace that's quiet and clean and just away from everyone? And why do they always seem to circle around four times before they lay down. Tell us about that particular portion of the website. It's fun.
Yeah, I really like it too. I think that one of the reasons that this is such a nice portion of catfriendly.com is it really hones in on some of those really unique feline behaviors that are just hard to understand sometimes. People say, why is my cat scratching? Why is my cat vocalizing at night? My cat was up at 3 a.m. and I don't know what they want. And it is so bizarre. So we wanted to have an area where some of these really unique cat questions were addressed on a level that makes sense for somebody that's wanting accurate information about their cat. And again, one of the nice things about our website, most of our content is authored by veterinarians or the equivalent, the medical equivalent. So it's written for cat caregivers by the people that are seeing cats day in and day out and with in mind the information they want you to have. It's great. It's really a great website overall.
Scratching. You got to talk about that. I mean, the controversy back and forth of trimming your cat's nails, putting on little nail caps, declawing cats, but it gets down to why are they scratching on furniture and the rugs and everything else? So why are they scratching?
Yeah, cats scratch because it's a natural behavior for cats. It's part of a marking process. It's part of an environmental paw trimming process where cats both scratch to remove those outer husks or the dead layers of keratin that their nails shed over time, and scratching helps to perform that function. Just like biting their nails can also facilitate that. But it's a natural outlet for cats on so many levels, behavioral and functional, physiologically. It's not something that we should view as irregular or abnormal for cats. What's abnormal for us is we don't expect the places that cats might want to scratch. And that's led to, as you've said, a lot of controversies in feline medicine. But we should not think of scratching as something abnormal. We should just think of it as something that a cat needs an outlet to be able to do that. That's something that cats want to do as a species. And we just need to facilitate appropriate ways for that to happen within our environments as people with cats.
Having cats myself and having, you know, various types of scratching posts, you can start off with one that seems just perfect when they're kittens. And then when they get older, it's like they don't seem to like it anymore. And I think people need to realize that for ourselves, some people like the feel of cotton, some like the feel of silk. And kitties with their little claws, they have differences too. So they may like cardboard for one or a sisal rope for another or a particular type of carpet. So whatever they like. I find that if it's in an area where they can get to it, where once it seems a little bit dirty and you and I might say, you know, as cat parents instead of maybe as cat veterinarians saying, oh, that's ugly. I just want to throw it away. And the cat's going, that's finally my pair of jeans that were broken in and they're perfect. Don't dare throw away that stinky, horrible looking thing. That's my favorite thing. How can people get their cats to use a scratching post? As for instance, if they were to adopt an older pet. So typically kitties, they seem to catch on, but how about older cats?
You know, I've had a lot of personal success with older cats and scratching. I think that there's certainly always the nice fallback of the scratching post smorgasbord. As you've said, different substrates, which is just a fancy word for the type of scratching post, cardboard, corrugated cardboard, many, many cats like. A recent study was done by Teresa DePorter, who's another practitioner. She's a behaviorist, actually just down the road from me here in Michigan. And she surveyed local cats and cat owners about their substrate preferences. And I think she found that in her survey, the slightly more popular version was the sisal cat scratchers. And there were some heights that cats seemed to like and some heights that cats didn't seem to prefer as much. Cardboard, as we've said, there could be some more firm substrates, almost like the emery board that we use for our own nails. Carpet remnants can be a nice substrate for some cats. So there's a whole bunch of different options out there. Placement of these posts can be really helpful, especially for senior cats or older cats. If you're adopting an older cat, things to think about are going to be, could arthritis be a factor in how your cat's going to select where they want to scratch? Is it easier for them to scratch on a horizontal surface rather than a vertical, which might put some stress on their lumbar and might cause some aches and pains if they do have a touch of arthritis there? So there's a lot of considerations there. If you, as most of us do, have a multi-level house or a basement, many times as a human species, we're inclined to put things for our pets out of sight, which often means on the lower level or in the basement. But if you have an older kitty, it might be easier for them to have access to the main level of the house in an area they spend a lot of time, so that their scratching post is right there. They don't have to go up and down stairs to get to that. So just kind of thinking of them as a senior person, what's the easiest way for them to be able to get around and get to these important environmental enrichment areas of the house? And scratching posts, those are key, absolutely key.
Well, these are all great tips. One of the last sites I want to touch on is the idea of being a cat-friendly caregiver. So you have a cat, you like cats, so of course I'm being cat-friendly. What are things that a cat owner can do to be a better cat owner?
That's a great question. As a feline veterinarian, my first reaction is to say that bringing your cat to the vet, having a good relationship with your veterinarian is so critical, because there are so many things that are just hard to look for or see at home that we just can't identify as pet owners, that we don't think of as pet owners. And again, having that outside set of eyes to look at your cat once or twice a year, that can be so key in detecting diseases or discomfort or other issues before they become major issues. They can also give you tips. A veterinarian is happy to share tips on enriching the environment at home and feeding your cat so that they're not obese, and feeding your cat so that they have the appropriate nutrition for their life stage. So that veterinary relationship, I think, is one of the most key components of being a cat-friendly caregiver. I really, truly believe that from the bottom of my core. I think that other things people can do, certainly having the environment that's really tailored as much as possible to a cat's world and point of view and what they need. So we've already touched on scratching posts. We've touched a little bit on diet and different ways to feed your cat, brushing your cat's teeth, trying to address their dental health. I think those are all great ways to also facilitate your cat having the best indoor or indoor-outdoor lifestyle that they possibly can.
Having identification, getting ready for disasters, all those things can happen. Having pet insurance, all those things are talked about on the catfriendly.com website, which is wonderful information, just like you've given us today, Dr. Demo. So thank you so much for being my guest. I hope that all these cat owners will go to your website, learn, talk to their veterinarian, and keep those kitties as healthy as possible. Listeners, you may be thinking, Dr. Demo's, a cat practitioner, she's just a warm, fuzzy pussy cat. And this is a woman who just completed a 300-mile kayaking adventure in the Florida Everglades. So she's not a total pussycat. I think there's some tigers underneath there also. So Dr. Demos, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. This was absolutely my pleasure. You could always get me to talk about cats. The hard part's getting me to stop.
I love it. Well, this is Dr. Bernadine Cruz. You've been listening to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. Please tune in again next week. We'll give you more information on how to make you the best possible pet owner. And if you have any topics that you want covered, please just go ahead and drop us a line at PetLifeRadio.com. Take care.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.